This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number three of Sharp Money, live from Las Vegas in our South Point Sportsbook studio. As we welcome you back, I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Amal Shaw is here and on the desk joining us right now. He's trying to beat the heat right now. Him and I played golf a couple weeks ago, and man, it was a toasty one. Adam Burke,
it was hot.
He's recovered.
I'm still recovering.
Adam, who jumped into his pool fully clothed after the break.
You guys sound like a couple of smart guys. It's only about 115 out here. Well,
at least it was only 105 or so the day we played.
That's a dry heat.
Carl said he played golf on Sunday when it was 118 out. I'm like, why?
Well, because I got to defend Jeff on that. He didn't complain about it.
He did not complain. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I need to save like $30 to play golf when it's 130 degrees outside.
Yeah, I get it.
Why, is there a discount?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nobody wants to play.
Oh, half the time, I've had rounds, I just walk out on the course and they go, oh, go ahead. 118, you're a psycho.
So you literally walk out on the course and then continue walking through your round.
Well,
which is just psychotic behavior.
Well, you know, it's a given.
Might need a padded room.
Maybe. That may or may not be a thing coming to a local townhouse near you in the year 2023. Adam joins us right now. We're going to talk college football, first half of the hour, a little baseball to end it here. But with the upcoming college football betting guide, you had a big hand. We did our NFL football NFL betting guide special a couple weeks ago. College guide coming out in a couple weeks. So first off, just a quick preview, where we stand on that. How, I assume basically every team like we've had in the years past will be heavily profiled in this year's guide.
Yep, all 10 conferences plus the independents, all 133 FBS teams will have a team preview for in that college football guide. Comes out August 3rd. So
nice, we have a date.
Two weeks from Thursday. So it'll be out here before you know it. Very excited to get that publication out to you. Of course, it is a big project. There's a lot of editing, a lot of proofing that's involved. So we're on a good timeline for it. We'll definitely have it out by August 3rd. But I did the AAC, Conference USA, and Sun Belt for specific team previews, and then also have a couple of feature articles in there as well. But, 1999, that introductory offer over at VSiN.com, or $19, I think it is actually, that'll get you the NFL guide, which we released June 29th, also the upcoming college football guide, because that's a first-month introductory price.
Don't shortchange the people 99 cents, okay, Adam?
Sorry.
Let's go. We're company men over here on
Well, the goal is
money.
That, makes you a smarter, better, and helps you win more bets.
Exactly. That is certainly the goal. We talk about a team that you guys both follow very, very closely, the Ohio State Buckeyes. Adam, you do the Ohio Sports Betting Show every Friday here from VSiN.
Do I have that right? VSiN Saturday Betting Hour.
Oh, sorry, the VSiN. It is colloquially referred to within our network
the Ohio Show. Yes,
that Adam Burke does. So Ohio State in 2023, you come off a year in which you lose again to Michigan. You lose a star quarterback in C.J. Stroud to the NFL, star wide receiver in Jackson Smith, the Jigba. From what the Buckeyes have brought in, Adam, as you've broken down their offseason, with a win total of 10.5, co-favorites to win the Big Ten with Michigan, what do you expect now for Ryan Day as he enters another season where a lot of pressure will be on to get past the maize and blue?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that this win total line is actually pretty accurate. I have 10.62 wins in my projections for Ohio State, so I'm pretty much right on the market number. As I was talking about with Amal during the break, I have Ohio State at least an 8-point favorite in every game, except for that game against Michigan. And I got Michigan a 2.5-point favorite in that one, though I do give them one of the biggest home field advantages in the country at the Big House. So that's a big part of the difference in that line. I actually do have Ohio State power rated 1 point higher than Michigan. But of course, there are some big questions. What will Kyle McCord do filling the shoes of C.J. Stroud? But look at me from a skill position standpoint, this might be the best team in the country with Trayvon Henderson, Mayan Williams, and Dallin Hayden all back. Marvin Harrison Jr., who's the favorite over at DraftKings to be the first non-quarterback selected in the 2024 NFL Draft. Igbuka, Fleming, the defense should be better under second-year coordinator Jim Knowles. Should be a great year for Ohio State, but as we know them all, they're defined by what they do in that Week 13 game right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they got a tough game October 28th at Camp Randall. It's always been historically a tough spot for Ohio State going up into Madison, but I don't think Wisconsin's quite at the level Ohio State is from a talent standpoint, and you're absolutely right. To me, this could be the year where you see a Big Ten national champion. I think Georgia's good, but the schedule is really what elevates them. Alabama's got some question marks, as we've seen. USC defensively, I've got some concerns about them. You mentioned Kyle McCord. If he can't get the job done, Devin Brown, a kid out of Utah, he's a backup. He's got more mobility. But remember, McCord played high school football at St. Joe's in Philadelphia with Marvin Harrison Jr. This team should be elite offensively. I mean, if they almost got C.J. Stroud to come back. They were potentially convincing him. He almost came back. the offensive line, but Donovan Jackson at the right guard position should be an All-American. This team should be really, really good. And I'm with him. Defensively, under the second year, they should be much better under Jim Knowles. I think both Michigan and Ohio State will be undefeated when they meet in Ann Arbor on November 25th, once again for the Big Ten title. I think both teams are going to get in the playoff.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder from the offensive line perspective, you mentioned some of the returners they have, but they did have three offensive linemen drafted, headlined by Paris Johnson, who goes sixth overall to Arizona. So when you think about 60% of your offensive line is brand new. New quarterback in Kyle McCord, who's basically thrown, 20 passes a year, 20 passes last year, 38 in 2021 as a two-year backup. That's the only question mark I would have. It probably helps, Adam, that it's a very soft schedule out of the gates, though.
It is. I mean, look, they do have to go to South Bend and play that game against Notre Dame the end of September, which I think will be a really interesting matchup for them, especially, you know, they'll at least get their feet wet with a road game against Indiana, too. So McCord, I assume Devin Brown should play in that game as well. You should use both of them, as far as I'm concerned, if you're Ryan Day or Brian Hartline. Let them get some experience in a road environment. But I think the one thing that'll be really interesting to see is, how is this offense run under Brian Hartline? How much running do they do? Because they have a very loaded backfield. As you mentioned, they do have the three new offensive line starters. I think there's kind of this perception, this expectation that Hartline is just going to air it out because he's the wide receiver guy. But I think that they will rely on the run when they need to. And I think Hartline may end up ultimately with a better feel for when to run the ball, when to throw the ball, what to do in the red zone than Ryan Day's had as the play caller the last few years.
I agree with you completely. Look, Ohio State should have won the national title last year, 4th and 1 at the 34-yard line with a 10-point lead and 7 minutes to go against Georgia. Granted, they didn't have Mayan Williams or Travion Henderson. To me, you get 1 yard, you win the national title, because they would have beaten TCU. They've got to be more aggressive in the running game. They've been a little bit too pass reliant. You've got to be Ohio State. If you look at them historically, they could line up and play smash mouth football with anybody. And they've gotten away from that under Ryan Day a little bit. They've had some opportunities even against Michigan last year. They go for it on 4th and 1. Stroud misses Cade Stover. So to me, this team, if they play physical football, they've got an opportunity. And that's what's made Michigan so good. They've played physical football with Blake Corum, with Donovan Edwards, you know, but Michigan's got the same question mark. They've got a talented backfield. Ohio State, to me, is the best skill position team in college football, but Michigan's tailback room is the best in college football. But the question is, Adam, how good is J.J. McCarthy, and Ben, can he deliver when the Wolverines need him in a tight game? The Wolverines, just like Ohio State, are probably not going to have a lot of tight games. And what works well for Ohio State is Adam alluded to it. They play Notre Dame in Week 4. If they're playing Notre Dame in Week 2 in South Bend, it'd be a problem because Hartman's much more experienced. But now you've got 3 weeks to break in your quarterbacks. You've got a couple of tune-ups at home. They should be just fine by the time they get to South Bend.
And that's the question, right? I mean, for Ohio State, they at least get a test at some point.
Yeah.
Michigan, I have them a 21-point favorite in each of their first 9 games, at least. So they don't really get tested until they play that game at Happy Valley. And I'm a little bit higher than Penn State, or on Penn State, than the market seems to be. I do think maybe Drew Aller will be the guy at quarterback to kind of take them to the next level. I don't like James Franklin in big games. I think he's a terrible in-game coach. Great motivator, decent guy in terms of game prep. Bad guy when it comes to, you know, kind of stopping negative trends, kind of stopping negative momentum. They've had Ohio State on the ropes a few times, let them back in the game, ultimately lost. But that'll be an interesting test for Michigan and their first test in Week 11 in Happy Valley. So up until then, we won't really find out anything about the Wolverines, right? Because they're just going to be a massive favorite in all their games. I will say, if I had to take one of the two win totals, I think it would be Michigan. I mean, I have them projected for 11.15 wins.
Think about last year. It's just funny to me, Adam. Remember the first few weeks of the year, Michigan was favored by a combined 98 points in the first 3 games. It's like, you'd think maybe they'd, you know, well, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Sure, they're just going to stick with it. And that's why
it's
I wonder
a lot more this year, by the way.
That's going to be a lot more, yeah.
East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, Rutgers, all at home in their first 4 games.
George is almost embarrassed by that schedule. I mean, but no, the reality of it is, look, Adam, what I said I would bet is Michigan right now is plus 340 to go undefeated in 12-0, and Ohio State's plus 380. I would bet both of those because I think both these teams on November 25th are going to be 11-0, and whoever wins that game is going to cash that ticket for you. To me, these two teams are clearly head and shoulders above everyone else. You mentioned Penn State. I like Penn State a lot, but I think they're in 2024, but you talk about a great backfield. Katron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, these guys are absolute studs. They're sophomores. They're studs. Drew Aller is going to be the guy in 2024. I think he's got a chance to have a great year this year, but they're still a step behind Ohio State and Michigan. James Franklin said it best a few years ago. He goes, we're a very good football program. We are not elite. They are not elite. That's where they're lacking right now. They've got some good skill position players. They just don't have it overall on their 22.
I just think about if you're going to power rate Ohio State, Michigan, and that's the thing, because they're co-favorites, Adam, from your ratings that you do, and we'll get into the rest of the conferences after the next break, because I am also fascinated by the Penn State win total in 2023. Who comes out on top for you just heading into the year as far as your raw numbers?
So heading into the year, I would have Ohio State minus one on a neutral. Okay. So I do give Michigan a 3.5-point home field advantage. That's why they're a 2.5-point favorite for me in that head-to-head meeting. Maybe that's a little bit presumptuous with the Buckeyes, assuming that Kyle McCord is going to be the guy. But again, I mean, from a skill position standpoint, that talent is off the charts. And the Noles defensive scheme, I think, takes a year or two to really get locked in. And I think Ohio State should be much better with it this year.
Again, those undefeated numbers we were talking about, them all plus 340 for Ohio State, plus 380 for Michigan this year.
Yeah, and real quick, if they have the national championship odds up, I'm going to tell you right now, I would bet the two teams from the Big Ten. I think they've got a great shot. To me, I don't know where you're at, Adam, on J.J. McCarthy. I have a ton of question marks, but I got to tell you right now, Corum and Edwards are as good of a combination in terms of running the football as we've seen in a number of years in college football. These guys are absolute dudes.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, does McCarthy have to win you a game at some point? Is it the game against Ohio State? I do still have Georgia, the top power-rated team in the country. They'd be a 2.5-point favorite over Ohio State on a neutral, 3.5 over Michigan. But Georgia has plenty of question marks as well, as you mentioned.
Hey, Ohio State plus 650, Michigan plus 850 as we get into the start of this 2023 season. We'll talk about the rest of the Big Ten next with Adam, because there is a team in Penn State that seems like they're in a tier of their own, and then a whole lot of teams with a whole lot of question marks. We want to sift through some of those win totals with Adam Burke, who is the managing editor of not only our NFL, but also our soon-to-be-released college football betting guide. We'll discuss that next with Adam in studio right here on VSiN Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. We are talking college football right now. Adam Burke in studio joining us, managing editor of our upcoming college football betting guide here from VSiN. Also handled the publication of our NFL betting guide, which is out, available right now. Talking some Big Ten football, gentlemen. And we'll go to the third team on the odds board in Penn State, plus 550 at DraftKings. If you include, actually 6-1 right now at DraftKings, if you include Rutgers, since a lot of the books with the New Jersey jurisdictions do not allow you to bet on a Rutgers, so to speak, just to clarify how that changes the odds. With all the teams included, Penn State's about 5.5-1. Amal, you've said a couple times, you view this being a Penn State team that will be really, really good in 2024, but what's your realistic expectation for them, at least in 23?
You know, Penn State kind of reminds me of what it's been for the last several years for them. 9-3, 10-2. They're going to lose to Ohio State and Michigan. They got to go to Columbus. They've got the Wolverines coming in to State College. I think when you look at it, and I hate to go to a team a year away, but when you put Aller as a junior, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton as juniors, they become probably the best quarterback running back combination in college football in 2 years. But right now, I just don't think they're good enough from a overall 22 standpoint to match up with Michigan and Ohio State. They open up with the Mounties. That's going to be a little bit more of a rivalry game in the area because you've got kids from Western PA and West Virginia. A lot of kids on their roster are from Western PA as well. You get the Hawkeyes in what Adam should probably be a 9-6 game as Iowa plays Penn State in some of the worst football
11-8
games.
11-8 I was going to go with, yeah.
Some of the worst football games we've ever seen. So, you know, the schedule's fine. At Maryland, another game on the East Coast, a little bit more of a rivalry, and somehow they forced this Michigan State-Penn State end-of-the-year alleged rivalry game. This team should be 10-2. The schedule is very manageable. No real challenge there. I mean, you get UMass, Delaware, the Mounties. As I said, this schedule is very good for them.
It is a very good schedule for them. I mean, their season went till 9.5 with some overjuice, and understandably so. I mean, this team, if you ran a bunch of simulations, this team's going 10-2 way more often than not. I mean, do they beat Michigan? Probably not. Do they beat Ohio State? Probably not. Do they win their 10 other games? They should. I have them a double-digit favorite in every single one of them. So this team should go 10-2, and again, it'll be one of those things where their season, their ceiling is defined by if they can beat Ohio State or Michigan. And frankly, I don't think so, but I do agree with them all that they are kind of building towards maybe being closer to being able to go up against those two teams and pull off one of the upsets. But I don't really think this is the year. I do have them as a 3.5-point dog at home against Michigan in that Week 11 game.
To Adam's point, James Franklin will have a 7-point lead, and it'll be 3rd-and-1 instead of having one of the dudes, and they got absolute dudes, make no mistake about it, between Singleton and Allen. He'll throw the ball, and it'll be 3rd-and-7, and you see they're playing, they've got 7 guys in the box, and he'll try and run the ball. Remember that play that they ran with Trace McSorley against Ohio State? Nobody was happier than me that he's got Chase Young sitting there waiting for him, runs one of the dumbest plays you've ever seen. That's what Penn State has done. Look, they don't have the same in-state talent in the state of Pennsylvania that they once had, but this program, if they can find a way to get on track, and defensively they're always consistent, they're always good,
right,
they could be right there in terms of what they're capable of doing in this conference. I just don't see them, though, getting over the top here right now against Michigan and Ohio State.
Was there an in-game coaching matchup that fascinated you more than the Brian Harsin versus James Franklin when you had that Auburn-Penn State game where it was just like just comical back and forth? I mean, it was like fourth down decisions all over the place. Crazy.
By the way, I love that game because that was an easy one for Penn State. But Brian Harsin is one of the worst coaching hires in the history of college football. How do you take a guy from Boise, Idaho to go down on the plains and go compete against Nick Saban? You got a guy, you got to get guys who know how, who have to know how to funnel money through the churches to get recruits. Yep. Brian Harsin doesn't strike me as that kind of guy showing up with the bags in the churches in Georgia.
Didn't work out that way.
I'm enjoying this. This is the most animated I've seen them all during one of my Tuesday hours. This is perfect.
Yesterday, Adam, with his top 10 overrated.
Well, I wasn't given a sedative.
That's okay. That's fair. That's true.
It is also.
Patrick's out of town. You elevate your game. I like it.
I don't know about that, but I mean, you know, sometimes if you're being suffocated, it's hard to breathe.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, Amal yesterday was beautiful for his top 10
college
overrated
football,
college
I'm
football
I'm always fired it up.
Top 10 overrated coaches. Yeah. He's always ready to go on topics like that. But as far as the rest of this conference, are you viewing Penn State as a clear third, or do you give Wisconsin enough of an upside, Adam, this year to potentially compete for that? Wisconsin is fourth on the overall odds board, about plus 750.
So Wisconsin's a really tricky team. I mean, I do have a projection for them of almost 10 wins. So that's definitely above where their season win total line is. It's 8.5 with overjuice. I do think this is worthy of an over bet. I think Illinois is a good team. I don't really like anybody else that much in the West Division. But the thing about Wisconsin that's going to be really, really intriguing, couple of things. The first is Tanner Mordecai is what, the best quarterback they've had since Russell Wilson?
It's exactly what I said, yep.
So there's that, which helps them. But the other thing is,
since Allen Everidge, but
I mean, we could keep going back if you want to. But the other thing is, this team is not exactly built for the Phil Longo offense. So I'm curious to see how quickly that takes hold, because they are kind of more of a play action and hope to complete a few passes here and there, run the football a ton. That's not really what Phil Longo's done as an offensive coordinator throughout his career. So the question is, can they work with the personnel that they have and get those guys to be pretty efficient on offense, where Mordecai should be a good quarterback? Braylon Allen is still a very, very good running back. Do they have the talent at wide receiver to kind of execute the route concepts that Longo has? Can they play with a little bit of tempo? The defense should be fine. I mean, Luke Fickell, you know, should do a great job, and Wisconsin's historically great on defense anyway. But that offense, is there a game in there, maybe early on somewhere or something like that, where they just don't really click on offense and wind up losing maybe to a team that they shouldn't? I wouldn't be totally shocked about that. So Wisconsin is a team where they get to ease into the season as well. Buffalo, Washington State's a decent team. That trip to Pullman is interesting. But
they lost to Wazoo, who's a 17-point favorite at home last year.
So. Right. So, you know, I mean, I think if they get time to kind of figure it out and get it together, and if they have it together by the end of October, those two games against Illinois and Ohio State become really intriguing.
I think Wisconsin's got a shot. I don't know where, Adam, you come in on their season win total, but I think they've got a shot to go 11-1. Adam's absolutely right. Tanner Mordecai is the best quarterback they've had since Russell Wilson when they went to the Rose Bowl and lost to TCU. You've got a quarterback with mobility, good accuracy. Remember, Mordecai played at Oklahoma, transferred to SMU, and now he's at Wisconsin. You mentioned Longo's offense. He was at North Carolina for the last 4 years. They were elite offensively. They don't necessarily have that. But for my money, I don't know where you come out on this one, Adam. Braylon Allen is the best running back in the Big Ten. You're talking about, I mentioned Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, Travion Henderson, Mayan Williams, Donovan Edwards, and Blake Corum. I mean, there's absolute studs in terms of the running back, but I think Braylon Allen's as good as anybody, and Mordecai will be more accurate than anybody they've had in a long time, minus the one game Graham Mertz played well in his entire career against Illinois. Yeah. Other than that, you're going to have the best quarterback from an accuracy standpoint. I think this team could potentially be and should really be undefeated going into week number 8 against Ohio State. Should be an undefeated showdown in Camp Randall.
I'm very impressed with what Brett Bielema's done with Illinois here. I do still have Illinois a 6.5-point dog in that game at home against Wisconsin. And I have the Badgers favored in 11 of their 12 games. Of course, the exception being the game against Ohio State. So my projection, 9.99 wins, but 11-1 is not out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just because real quick, the rivalry game against Minnesota is always tougher than it appears on paper, because if you're not from that part of the country, Ben, you know you grew up in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah,
that is an underappreciated rivalry.
It is. And I miss when it was in the dome, it was always special. Yeah. And with the Paul Bunyan's accent, that was like an ESPN 2 11 a.m. Central
yes,
special.
Exactly.
Every single year. Growing up, essentially, as Wisconsin is win total, Adam liking them to go over. Illinois sitting at 6.5. Rest of the conference, Adam, teams that you are looking to fade here that look like, I mean, it's not limited to just Northwestern, who has all of their issues going on with the firing of Pat Fitzgerald, but a bunch of teams apparently in transition. When you look at the rosters, Adam, what teams are you looking at that could be very, very poor on the field this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super thrilled about what Michigan State has coming back. I think that's a team that could end up being pretty bad and may kind of disappoint themselves in some of their games against East Division teams that aren't elite. I think they could have problems, you know, with a team like Maryland, could even have problems with, you know, possibly even a team like Rutgers or Indiana, despite the fact that they don't look very good. There's actually one, I know we're running up against the clock here, but I actually want to ask them all about this one, because they're kind of a perplexing team to me. What do you expect from Nebraska this year?
You know what? Here's the thing. You got Jeff Sims, the Georgia Tech transfer, who's got great mobility. Couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat in terms of accuracy. That's a big concern I have for Matt Rhule's team. I like the way Matt Rhule is in terms of getting guys playing in the right direction. They've been competitive. I have some question marks. I'm not as high in Nebraska as other people are, Adam. I've got to see it. I think you need a year to kind of transition and ease it. Think about this. Bob Stoops wins his national title second year at Oklahoma. They were 7-6 his first year. Saban gets things going in the right direction in Tuscaloosa in year two. They're 7-6 in his first year. Generally speaking, there is a hiccup in the program in terms of getting to be an elite team until year two. I think this team could be over 500, but I don't expect Nebraska to be one where you sit there and go, hey, they can compete with Wisconsin or sure. Illinois for the Big Ten West.
Win total is 6, which feels pretty spot on, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask, I have 4 games for them that are plus or minus a field goal, basically. Yeah, so sure. They have a bunch of toss-up games, and is Matt Rhule the guy going to steward them through those close games and help them win them? Because clearly Scott Frost wasn't.
Yeah. Well, it isn't his third year yet, so I mean, clearly, if things go south, it's not Matt Rhule's third year yet, so it's time to wait on the turnaround in Lincoln. When we return, we'll transition, talk a little bit of baseball with our VSiN MLB betting analyst, Adam Burke, right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today, and new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use promo code VSIN when you sign up. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. Back with Amal Shaw and Adam Burke. I'm Ben Wilson. I'm really happy. This is amazing from Adam Burke's perspective. He made it out from underneath the tarp at Great American Ballpark last night. He got caught under there, but he somehow made it to Las Vegas overnight, and he's here. So job well done, Adam.
Biggest thunderstorm I've ever seen at a ballpark was in Cincinnati.
Yeah,
it was. I've never seen rain like that or lightning like that, which they played through for like a half inning. And they were like, oh, you know what? We're going to stop.
I love it. It'd be like April. It'd be a threat of rain 7 miles away. They'll call the game. We get to August. There's like lightning strikes within, like at the concession stand. You're like, hey guys, let's see if we can play through this inning and let's complete this game.
And I love the juxtaposition once we get to August where you have that going on. And then in the Louisiana Tech week one game where there's a lightning strike 80 miles away and they got to evacuate the stadium. That's also a great one, Mal.
Don't we have too many people anyway? We lose a couple. It's okay.
Speaking of Louisiana Tech, should we talk Conference USA instead of MLB?
I'm down. Sure. Hold on a second. We'll get an email for talking about Conference USA.
I wrote about it for the guide, so it's fresh in my mind. But it's Ben Wilson's show. I guess technically it's Wyatt's show behind the glass.
I'm just filling in for Dustin. You know, this is
Ben
Dustin's show.
Ben is the captain of the ship.
Big year for CUSA, adding Sam Houston and New Mexico State.
By the way, Jacksonville State.
And New Mexico State.
Yeah.
And New Mexico State.
And Liberty.
And that, too.
It's a brutal conference.
New Mexico State's in the Conference USA now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, what conference were they in before? Was
the WAC?
Well, they were independent after the WAC.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just glad they got a football team.
Hey, they won a
they're
bowl
just
game
glad
last
they
year.
Have a football team. Jerry Kill.
I think they're glad Jerry Kill is healthy. I mean, that's the big thing.
I'm saying, remember, don't forget the basketball team couldn't play the rest of the year.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. As somebody who calls WAC games for the conference, that was quite quite interesting. With
you didn't
Mexico
say
State.
This situation is WAC in New Mexico State when you were on the call, did you?
No, I did not. Okay. I did not. That would be a very Brockmire thing of me to do.
Outside of Ben Wilson's parents, and his agents, I've heard Ben call more play-by-play than anybody.
That's
I've
true
actually,
statement.
That
true
is
statement.
True. I am, yeah, because I feel bad because I'll text him when he's doing the game. I'm like, hey, are you doing the WAC tournament? And I'm like, because I'll be watching it on ESPN Plus. And he's like, yeah.
I'm feeling
plus
so
side,
bad.
He's damn good at it, which is
well,
which helps.
Well, he's very
he's
good.
Very good to listen to.
I told him one day I was watching a Utah-Oregon game, College Hoops on FS1. And I'm like, God, that sounds like Ben. And then I see his name come up on the screen. So I sent him a text. I said, hey, great job. But he does do a tremendous job.
I remember feeling bad because Amal had I think it was Stephen F. Austin in a future at the WAC tournament 2 years ago, and they're playing Abilene Christian. And I know how much Amal likes it when the score bug has the timeouts and the fouls. Well, we were at the ancient Orleans Arena, which it was built in like, 1841, basically, if that's what you,
you think
feel
it was
like
that
it
recent?
I was trying to give him benefit of the doubt there.
Yeah. Oh, so Orleans Arena was definitely 2000.
Our score bug was very limited. So I was trying to, make sure I said what the foul situation was. As Stephen F. Austin shot like 21% from the field, lost Abilene Christian, and Amal's bet went to smoke.
So my big pet peeve, Adam, is during college basketball, now they do a better job over the last half a dozen years, they put the number of fouls by team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important stat
it is,
when you're watching college basketball, because if you've got a team that's got 17 fouls and the other side's got two, it's crucial in terms of how the game might play out from an in-play standpoint.
For sure. It's a great live betting angle to look at.
Absolutely.
Like how we've talked, usage of a team timeouts and fouls on college basketball telecasts. We've talked usage of team national television profile as it relates to Heisman betting, which is a totally real thing. I hope you guys are ready, by the way, for the classic, the tradition of Penn State, West Virginia on NBC Big Ten football. I hope you guys are ready for that.
First of all, the NBC broadcasts are terrible. I mean, what?
I'm not going to comment on that.
What's that?
I'm not going to comment on that.
That's fine. You don't have to. They might be a future employer. Listen, I can tell you right now, you should be on. They're color commentary. They've got Brady Quinn available. But no. We're going to go with Mr. Notre Dame football, Drew Brees.
Notre Dame football is Tim Murray, who's coming up next on VSiN Prime
Time. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for that plug, Adam.
That's true.
As we steer the car back onto the rails here, Adam, we do have a lot of baseball to talk about. I mean, I know, Adam, I think when we talked like April 7th, you were already ready to be done with the baseball season. That's how infuriating it was. Here we are. We're 3 days after the All-Star break and same deal. But what's interesting is tonight we have the resumption of a suspended game. So Reds-Giants was 2-2 when the storm from the heavens just broke loose. And it was not Adam Burke who succumbed underneath the tarp. Luckily, that person was okay. So they'll resume that game and then play another one, which kind of makes for an interesting betting angle, I guess, Adam. And then when you factor in the pitching as well, what we'll see on the mound tonight too, makes for kind of an interesting handicap for this Tuesday card.
Yeah, it really does. So what is it, second and third one out for the Giants when this game resumes. So if I'm David Bell, I'm probably going to Alexis Diaz here right out of the chute. So that's something where he may be unavailable for the late game. So that's something you want to factor into the equation here with these suspended games. It is a very, very strange situation, but it's a 2-2 game. It's high leverage plate appearances the rest of the way now. So you probably want to use your best relievers in that setting, which to that point, I fought with, did I want to play the first five over or the full game over in the actually scheduled game with Anthony DeSclafani on the bump for the Giants and Luke Weaver going for the Reds. Ultimately, I decided to go with the first five, but I do think that if an Alexis Diaz throws an inning and a third, something like that in the first game, they'll probably be very reluctant to come back and use him like three hours later. So that's something you definitely want to factor into the equation, whether you do it now as part of your handicap or you wait and see how that suspended game plays out.
Giants in a great position. They're going to have runners on second and third with one out in the top of the eighth inning. So good opportunity to be able to get a run in here to take the lead. This San Francisco team, Adam, has done a great job this year flying under the radar. You know, we talk about the Diamondbacks and rightfully so, of course, the Dodgers, but the Giants quietly have really put together a nice season start since the start. They had a little bit of a rough April. I love the bullpen with Rodgers and Doval in the back. These guys are lights out.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is one of the smartest teams in Major League Baseball. Farhan Zaidi has done a phenomenal job building up the coaching staff. I've talked about this before, I think, on this actual show on Sharp Money, of they have three or four hitting coaches that have individualized hitting plans for each of the hitters on the team. It's not just, hey, we're all going to do this. We're all going to try and hit the ball in the air. Hey, we're all going to try and pull the ball. It's, hey, here's what you do well. Here's why you do it well. Here are the pitches that you should be looking for in the counts that you should be looking for. And so they've had guys that didn't have super high prospect grades come up and be really good hitters. They've isolated 1 and 2 year deals with free agents for guys that have come up here and really performed well. So that's just what the Giants are good at. And also they've leveraged the fact that they have multiple guys in the bullpen that can go more than one inning. And that's how they've kind of cobbled together some of their games as well. So I'm a really big fan of this Giants team in general. But one thing I want to mention here specific to this game and other games. So we've seen the home run to fly ball percentage skyrocket since the All-Star break. Over the 4 days, it's been about 13.6% or so. In early July, it was below 13%. And for the full season, it's like 12.5%. So there's two things. One, it's hot as hell everywhere. It's just very hot, very humid. The ball's carrying. The second thing is every pitcher who's going today, tomorrow, hasn't pitched in 9, 10, 11, 12 days, yeah, something like that. So a lot of these guys are kind of rusty. Some of the relievers have had to get back into rhythm as well. So we've seen a big uptick in home runs over the last 4 days.
Again, Al Roker joining, Adam Burke joining us in the studio right here on VSiN Sharp Money. You mentioned this NL West race with the Giants. Now, just two games back here, the Dodgers are 4-1 to win that division. What I look at the Diamondbacks as a team, and Amal and I talked about this to start the show, where the New York Yankees continue this tailspin. Finally, it seems like the bookmakers, the odds have flipped accurately, where the Yankees went from plus 150 to miss. Now they're minus 150 to miss. D-backs are in this precarious spot where they've lost 8 of 10. It's a team built with young arms, young talent overall that has not been tested, proven over 162-game sample size. Lose 8 of 10, and they're 2.5 back. It's minus 125 right now in Arizona to make, plus 105 to miss. Where do you assess Arizona right now? And could this be a team that in, say, 2 weeks' time, all of a sudden it's yes, like plus 200 to the no minus a big price?
So this is a really difficult spot from a betting standpoint, because if they can tread water over the next 2 weeks, the trade deadline is 2 weeks from today on August 1st. I fully expect they have at least two starting pitchers by the time the trade deadline passes. I don't know who they will be. I think Jordan Montgomery is a good fit. Maybe Jack Flaherty works, because pitching coach Brent Strom has done a really good job of cutting down walk rates for guys. If you do that with Flaherty, he's a very, very effective guy. Lucas Giolito is another name that could be in play. I think the Diamondbacks have at least two new starters, and I think they have at least one, maybe two new relievers as well by the trade deadline. So it's kind of hard to find a buy point on either yes or no, where I think if they don't do anything, if they're unable to get things done, they don't make the playoffs. But if they do, they still have a pretty good offense, and they're still a really good defensive team that can create run opportunities on the bases because of their athleticism. So I think it's tough. I think that as things currently stand with their current roster, no, they don't make the playoffs. But if they get a couple of starters and a couple of relievers, which is very possible, then yes, I think they do have a good shot at making the playoffs.
You look at this team right now, this is a tough spot. You go to three games into Atlanta. The Braves are coming off a two-game losing streak, got embarrassed on Sunday, and you've got Davies going tonight against Elder, and then you've got Strider and Gallen going tomorrow, which is potentially an NL's Cy Young elimination right game here. But this Diamondbacks team could leave here with a seven-game losing streak in Atlanta. This is not a team you want to be facing on a losing streak. I think the Braves here run line, it's a good spot for them against Davies tonight.
So, yeah, really interesting point, too. And also how, for looking at these season-long markets, consider what teams are doing and ought to be doing as we approach the trade deadline, because that could really swing either to the yes or the no as far as teams' prospects for making the playoffs. We'll recap Amal's bets. I've got some plays we'll discuss. Adam has his remaining plays when we return. Wrap up this edition of Sharp Money right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide is coming in just a couple weeks. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount of $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. This offer ends July 31st. That is 13 days away. So don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. We're back for the final time on Sharp Money. Big thanks to our producer, Wyatt Tomchak, in for Dustin. Great. We had a Tim Tebow mention, Adam, from Wyatt on the air today. So that was great. Got him all riled up more than he already was. So
Tim Tebow, huh? Haven't heard that name in a while.
Haven't heard that name in a while. No. No, we have not. Thank you to Wyatt Behind the Glass, Sean McCall on audio, as well as Matt Hicks, Isaiah Wrinkle, our technical directors, Michelle Delgadillo on our graphics operator as well. And we think about where we're still at here, Adam, talking about this Tuesday MLB card to wrap up the show. Check out his VSiN Daily Baseball Bets podcast up right now. Full article as well online at VSiN.com. And two other plays for you, Adam. We go to an interesting pitching matchup in Wrigley Field, where it is a Patrick Corbin day, but that hasn't really been a thing now recently. The Nationals weirdly have actually played pretty well in Patrick Corbin starts against the up and down Jameson Taillon, who is getting back to the market up to a $1.70 favorite now today. Total of 9 appears as though pretty favorable hitting conditions there at Wrigley.
Yeah, hopefully I can right a wrong, because I had this one in the article yesterday with the over in this game with Drew Smyly and Mackenzie Gore. Took it out when the line moved up to 9 with overjuice, and of course it flew over the total anyway. But this one is 9 tonight, and Corbin, last 9 starts, 5.33 ERA, 5.42 FIP. He had that patch in April and May where he looked like a competent pitcher. That's long gone at this point. Taillon, I mean, he just hasn't had a lot of command, hasn't had a lot of good luck this season either. Defense behind him has been really, really bad. That's what happens when you pitch to contact sometimes, and there should be a lot of balls in play in this game. As you mentioned, it's not ideal hitting conditions at Wrigley Field, but good enough to where I think we get some runs here in this game tonight. And again, what I mentioned in the last segment, these pitchers are all on really, really long layoffs. We've seen a lot of home runs over the last 4 days. It's just hard to stay sharp when you're not working every 5, every 6 days. A lot of these guys on double-digit day layoffs. So I think this is a game where we do see that kind of come to the forefront, and both teams able to score some runs. Plus, neither one of these bullpens all that good either.
Yeah, both these teams going nowhere fast. Wind blowing in at about 7 miles an hour from center field tonight, 73 at about first pitch. Wrigley's one of those places you definitely check the weather if you're betting a side or a total.
Also, pretty amazing to think about. The Cubs' only team with a plus run differential in the NL Central. Yeah. And you look at that team night in, night out, and you go, all right, they're going nowhere. But you've always been kind of on the bandwagon the last couple of years of, you know what, variance in that division, that could be a team to back. But you keep waiting, and we're now at that point of the year where you got to make a move at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I lost a season win total over on them last year. I may very well lose a season win total over on them again this year, especially because, you know, Marcus Stroman seems like he's very likely to get moved. He won't be the only guy. Cody Bellinger is having a pretty good year. He'll be one of the more sought-after hitters at the trade deadline as well. So unless they make a move over the next 2 weeks or so, which probably won't happen, there'll be sellers, which, you know, probably leave my win total ticket dead in the water, despite, as you mentioned, being the only team with a plus run differential.
That counts for a lot.
Yeah, counts for
a
lot.
And by a lot.
Yep, counts for a losing ticket.
Yeah, sometimes.
Bellinger, he's a plus-plus defender in center, and he's hit the ball far better than he did the last several years in Los Angeles. So he's a player that could be a quiet, good acquisition for somebody.
Sure. I think Houston would be a phenomenal fit. They don't have anybody that's really left-handed. Yeah. Yordan Alvarez is coming back, but it's him and Kyle Tucker, and that's it. Getting Bellinger as another left-handed bat would make sense.
Now, at least the contract rack-tack rates are, you know, manageable now for Bellinger, what we've seen. We'll track that team as a deadline target team as well. Wonder what the Blue Jays are going to do with the deadline, a team right now firmly in the mix for the postseason. And for Alek Manoah, who was just a disaster to start the year, but came back after a couple of really bad outings. It was at the spring training facility. They had him throwing basically simulated games. Was not going well for Manoah, the Blue Jay ace. Comes back, though, and almost shuts out the Detroit Tigers at him in his one start before the All-Star break. And you look at what he did in that outing, goes 6 strong, 1 run on 5 hits, no walks, 8 strikeouts. But he goes from at Detroit to now hosting San Diego and Joe Musgrove tonight, where the Padres are a road favorite. I can't wait to see what we get out of Manoah. I don't know how you potentially or possibly bet this tonight, but it will be a big telling point as to where Manoah's true recovery is at, I think.
Yeah, I have no idea what to do with this game tonight. I mean, Alek Manoah, as you mentioned, in that start, very efficient. Had his highest chase rate of the year, which is swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. Had his second highest zone percentage. So he was throwing pitches in the zone, but when he wasn't, he was getting chases. So that's a great sign for him, but also it's Detroit, who swings and misses a lot and chases a lot. They're not a very disciplined lineup. You know, a lot of people have been talking about how good Blake Snell has been, and deservedly so. What about Joe Musgrove? Last 9 starts, 1.79 ERA, 2.56 FIP, 54-8 strikeout to walk ratio, only 2 homers allowed. And he's only allowed 3 barreled balls in his last 9 starts, a 2% barrel rate, which is beyond elite. So Joe Musgrove really locked in for the Padres.
To your point, Adam, 8 of the last 9 starts, he's given up 2 earned runs or less. He had 1 start where he gave up 3 earned runs against the Cleveland Guardians. Other than that, he has been tremendous. That's the problem with the Padres, that just debacle we talked about earlier in Philadelphia over the weekend, Ben, was crucial because right now with the way Musgrove and Snell have been pitching between the last nine starts, as Adam referenced for Joe Musgrove and Blake Snell going back to around May 25th, they have been the two most dominant pitchers on one team in baseball. This team, if they had gotten into the postseason, which seems very unlikely now, could have really created some problems and challenges for a team like Atlanta.
San Diego, you're just getting nothing offensively when those guys have been on the hill. Yeah. Mal said earlier, Adam, Padres season ended Sunday. Do you agree with that?
Saturday, when they took out Blake Snell after five innings.
I don't know about that. I mean, the way that Snell and Musgrove are throwing, this offense has actually been quite good over the last 6 to 8 weeks or so. They're very bad in one-run games. I think they went into the break at 5-15 in one-run games. They had lost all eight extra inning games they had played. They've kind of run on the wrong side of variance in close games. The problem is they're running out of time because Blake Snell is an impending free agent. Josh Hader, same thing for him. You're going to get to a point where you have to decide, do we think we can actually make the playoffs, or do we have to trade these guys, refill our prospect system, because they've blown that up with some of the deals that they've made over the last couple of years in their quest for a World Series. So they're probably going to ultimately end up being sellers, which may, you know, keep them from getting into the playoffs, or just the fact that, you know, they have underperformed offensively for majority of the year.
I'll tell you, Adam, the reason why I think the season ended for them, they were playing the Phillies head-to-head in four games. They win the first game. They had Snell going in game two, had an opportunity to potentially get three out of four there. They don't do that. And now you're looking at your 7.5 behind Philadelphia, who's the last team for the wild card. Giants, Diamondbacks, and Marlins are the other teams. Forget the Reds for a minute here. The Reds either going to win the division or probably not get in as a wild card. But I feel like eight games with what are they? They played 94 games so far, so they've got 68 games remaining. Eight games is hard to make up in that stretch.
Plus 425 right now to make. And they're also trying to outdo the 1969 Montreal Expos. 0-12 in extra inning games were the Expos. How do you go 0-9 in extra inning? I get that it's variance and now that we have the Ghost Runner, but seriously, 0-9?
Because they use Hader in a tie game instead of using him in the 10th inning when you have the lead. I didn't understand that. You're on the road in a situation. Why are you using him in the bottom of the ninth?
And then they did bring him in the save situation Sunday, and then they blow this, and he blows the save up one run.
For most of the year, they were hitting under 200 with men in scoring position, too, when you get to extra innings and they give you a runner on second, that's probably not a good thing.
Yeah, I think they said on the broadcast Sunday, on the entire season, the nine extra inning games, the Padres have five hits in the entire extra innings, like for the whole season. Pretty remarkable.
Well, Cronworth is barely batting his weight.
Yeah, that's also kind of an issue as well. As far as one other play, Adam, before we run up against it here as we wrap up the show, interesting matchup tonight in the Pacific Northwest. You get Bailey Ober for the Twins, Brian Wu of Seattle, and pretty much an evenly lined game here. Seattle, just a slight home favorite taking on the Twinkies.
Yeah, outstanding pitching matchup tonight. I really like Bailey Ober. He's a guy that I don't think people realize how good he is. Maybe it's because he plays for Minnesota. Maybe he's just overshadowed by Sonny Gray and Joe Ryan and some of those other guys that are there, but this cat is 6'9". If you haven't seen him, he's very hard to be prepared for because he comes from such a high arm slot, great extension towards home plate. And if you're a team that strikes out a lot and swings and misses a lot like Seattle, I think that's even more of an issue. The thing that's difficult here is Brian Wu has been pitching really well for Seattle. Also gave up six runs in his first start. He's been extremely good since. But the thing I like here tonight, the Twins were in a difficult bullpen spot yesterday because of their bullpen usage against Oakland. Tonight, it's Seattle that's in a difficult bullpen spot with multiple guys that have worked back-to-back nights. So low-scoring expectation, two good starters. I think Ober could be a little bit better than Wu, and the bullpen edge for the Twins. I thought at plus money that was worth it. So it was plus 110 at DraftKings when I put up the article. You could have found plus 115 or so at other places. So that was the other play that I had for tonight.
Solid. And Amal, you're looking to lay run line here. Bryce Elder going up against the struggling Zach Davies of Arizona. About minus 105 I'm seeing on that run line price for the Braves.
I like the spot for Atlanta. Coming off a day of rest to get embarrassed on Sunday by the Chicago White Sox. Good opportunity to bounce back. Zach Davies, a pitcher that they can hit. This team, by the way, I don't know if there's any team that's better in the first inning than the Atlanta Braves. They just jump on you. And you get the Braves at minus 115. Not the ideal number because you got a minus minus there with a run and a half. But I don't want to lay $1.85. I just always think laying those types of numbers are just too high.
And if you shop around, you can find a 105 out there. A little more palatable to take. Adam, thank you as always for stopping by. Great to check
in
with you. Glad you survived the tarp. He made it. For Adam Burke, for Amal Shaw, for our producer Wyatt Tomchuk, I'm Ben Wilson. We'll be back, Amal and I, tomorrow for another 3 hours of fun here on Sharp Money. Up next, VSiN Primetime, Tim Murray, Sean King, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.